How does Christianity compare with Islam, Mormonism, skepticism, Buddhism, Scientology, Jehovah's Witnesses, and other world religions? You'll find answers in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about The Christian Difference at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference.
Indiana is one of five states that does not yet have a bias crimes law. It's time for us to move off that list.
That's Republican Governor Eric Holcomb speaking Tuesday to a joint session of the Indiana House and Senate about a proposed hate crime bill. They sound like a good idea. We don't want crime. We don't want crimes motivated by hate or characterized by hate. But should Christians be concerned about hate crime legislation? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about some proposed hate crime legislation in Indiana with Dr. Peter Scair. Dr. Scair is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's a member of God's Gift of Sexuality Task Force for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and author of an online petition opposed to Indiana's hate crime legislation. Peter, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Yeah, good to be with you, Todd. Oh,
come on, Peter. We are people of the gospel. This has nothing to do with how one is justified before God. And so what is a Lutheran pastor like you and a Lutheran seminary professor doing, getting your hands dirty, talking to people, even writing an online petition, letters to the governor about a proposed hate crime bill?
Yeah, I never thought of it. Maybe I'm doing it. No, of course, it's the right thing to do. This is all about defending the defenseless. This is all about being a voice for our fellow Christians. This is how we care for members of the body of Christ, because out there, it's tough being a Christian. And I taught at LCMSU, and this was Lutheran Church Missouri Synod University, kind of a little couple-day camp they had here at our seminary a couple weeks ago. And it was amazing, because I talked to young people and the kind of difficulties they had navigating the waters. And the waters have become treacherous thanks to the LGBT rainbow community, Rainbow Pride. And it's especially difficult with the use of pronouns, with gender, and it's difficult to speak the truth in the midst of this. And as you say, the devil is in the details, because how do you define hate? Well, we know how secularism defines hate. And secularism is an ideology. It's a religion. And you might know that it just happened in the news today that Vice President Pence's wife thought she would teach an art class at a local Christian school for a little while, because she was a teacher for many years and she wanted to get back in a Christian school. And what happened was they found out, since it was a Christian school, they had rules against homosexuality and homosexual teachers, that sort of thing. And because of that, and that's simply Christian belief, it's what we believe about sexuality, that marriage is between a man and a woman. And for that, she's being called all sorts of names. And as you might guess, she's being labeled a hater. The Southern Poverty Law Center, which is what is used by all the leftist groups and the newspapers and the magazines, they define hate groups, including such groups as the Alliance Defending Freedom, which is a wonderful group of Christian lawyers. They are defined as a hate group. Also, the Family Institute out in Colorado, they are also Dobson's former group. That is also defined as a hate group. So what is defined as hate is anyone who speaks against the LGBT ideology. Now, that might be saying that homosexuality, yes, is a sin, or simply saying that marriage is between a man and a woman. And because of this kind of thinking, Christians are in fact suffering. And we've seen that with Baronelle Stutzman, the seller of flowers. Her case was taken to the Supreme Court. We've seen it with Jack Phillips. And we've seen it very tellingly here in our own state, the story of John Klug, which is remarkable.
So before we get to, I'd like to hear the story of John Klug, but before we get to that, what exactly does this hate crime bill say, and what in it do you find to be most objectionable?
Well, here we're not yet at the point of a bill, although I'm sure many have been offered, but there is a typical kind of legislation, and that would to include mandatory increases in the sentencing against those who commit crimes with a particular animus against specific groups. And this was brought up, the governor brought this up because of a case of a synagogue in the Indianapolis area. And what happened there was a synagogue and somebody used some graffiti on the synagogue and put some, you know, horrible things on the synagogue. Well, the story was this guy was a 20-year-old and obviously a fool, quite ignorant, and probably, yes, hateful. And, you know, there's a lot to learn for that 20-year-old. And he was impressing, who was also accompanying him, his 19-year-old girlfriend. So it's kind of a mess. Probably not a great threat to society as a whole, but a mess. And now the interesting thing about that case is that the last I heard, he could go to jail for up to 10 years for graffiti. So there are all sorts of crimes you can commit. Now, the question is that a fair sentence? And, of course, I think most everyone would say 10 years for graffiti is more than an adequate sentence, which is to say in Indiana, already on the books in Indiana, judges have the jurisdiction, they have the ability to give crimes according to malice aforethought, according to premeditation. So judges already have that leeway. But what this does is make special protected classes so that if you commit a crime, let's say, against somebody of the, as they always say, the LGBT community, that person, of course, is protected in a way, kind of given an immunity in a way that, let's say, I, as a supporter of Trump, would not be, because that's not one of the protected classes. In a sense, what it does is it tips the scale of justice, and it's against our 14th Amendment rights of equal protection under the law. But as we see with the LGBT, this is part of a larger movement, and it's not about tolerance. It's about silencing opposition. It's not about free speech, but it's about limiting speech and setting tripwires up to get us in trouble. And it's also, and it has been used against Christians. And it's also an impingement on our rights of conscience and our free exercise of religion. And we've seen again and again that this kind of, these kinds of laws are, once we get them into, once you codify them into law, then they can be used in any number of ways in order to trip up Christians, to silence them, to fine them, to even put them in jail. So this is not a good law for us. And of course, you know, nobody wants to be called a hater. That's the thing, right? And but this is what they did to Jesus. They called him Beelzebub. They said he must be the devil because he casts out devils by the power of the devil. Jesus said the whole world will hate you because of me. So they're using, I think it's a kind of projection, their own hate, and now they're labeling Christians. And again, if you meet the people who have been labeled this way, some of the sweetest people in the world, I would just love, you know, I would love for all of our listeners to get to know people like Jack Phillips and Baron L. Stutzman.
So you had mentioned someone else earlier, a story that you said was local. What was that story?
Yeah, this is one, and I'm bringing this up especially in Indiana because that's where I'm from, that's the legislation. But Jack Klug was a teacher down in the Brownsburg area, and he taught orchestra, and I met the guy. He's just, again, a sweet guy. And there was pressure on them because of one of these, to use the right pronouns and to recognize the transgender child, which, again, is a whole another issue. But he couldn't do it because of his conscience. He didn't think that it was good for children to be treated in this way. So he came up with a compromise in order to accommodate the administration, but also, hopefully, they would accommodate his conscience. So according to the rules, he could not address a student by the wrong pronoun. So if a boy says he's now a girl, then you have to say, well, she said. Well, he couldn't do that because, I mean, you can say anything you want. I can say that I'm the Queen of England, and you don't have to bow and curtsy to me. You might, you know, humor me, but, you know, this is, there's a lot, and this is not, I don't want to make light of it, because gender dysphoria is no easy thing for the children. So they need comfort and compassion and often counseling, which is not allowed because of precisely this kind of legislation. Well, he didn't want to call the student by the new pronouns. And also, for instance, if Michael decided that he wanted to be called Michelle, he didn't feel comfortable going along with that. So he came up with this idea, which the principal agreed to, but then reneged on the idea, that he would simply call all the students by their last names. And I have professors who do that here where I teach today. I have friends who call up. They go, "Scare, come on over here." And never use my first name. It's just fine. Well, he used no first names in his class at all because he didn't want to discriminate against anyone or target anyone. He used no first names, and he simply used the name and the possessive when using, instead of the pronoun. So they'll say, instead of saying his paper, just say Scare's paper. And in that way, his conscience was protected, and at the same time, he was honoring the school policy. Now, in a sense, that would be an example, I think, of accommodation and of true tolerance in the midst of disagreement. But that would not stand. So because of that, he ended up losing his job. And I can tell you a worse one. I can tell you the story of a gym teacher who was asked to look over, to supervise, a locker room, a boys' locker room, as gym teachers do, to make sure everything is safe in there. Well, to look to supervise a locker room, you have to be there with the guys when they're undressing. No big deal. But now, in this locker room, there came in a young woman claiming to be a boy or young man. And, you know, she starts to undress. Now, this teacher, this gym teacher, is in this situation, and he has to leave because he's an older guy. I don't know if he's like me, 50 years old, but he knows he has no business looking upon the nakedness of a teenage girl. He says, this is not right. So he just left, and he told the administration, hey, I can't do this. I can't be here while this girl undresses. And for that, he was reprimanded. Well, that's what happens when you codify into law things like gender identity. Then what you're saying, and the state backs you up, is that whatever you say you are, but not only do you have the right to do that, but then everybody then must go along with it in every way, and that causes complications.
Dr. Peter Scare is Associate Professor of New Testament at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's a member of God's Gift of Sexuality Task Force for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and he's author of an online petition opposed to Indiana's hate crime legislation. You'll find a link to this petition, and I encourage each and every one of you to sign it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Peter, thank you very much for being our guest.
Yeah, my pleasure.
When we come back, we'll be in our series on Lutheran catechesis. Today, we'll be in the Eighth Commandment, and the story we'll be dealing with is Joseph defending his brothers with mercy in Genesis chapter 45. Pastor Peter Bender, director of the Concordia Catechetical Academy, will be our guest. Several Issues Etc. regular guests are candidates for leadership positions in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Every LCMS congregation has received nomination forms for the president and vice presidents of the synod. Please encourage your pastor and congregational leaders to fill out and return these nomination forms before February 20th of 2019. Learn more at issuesetc.org/nominations. issuesetc.org/nominations.
Interested in missions and evangelism? You won't want to miss the January issue of The Lutheran Witness. Learn how the Apostles' Creed informs personal evangelism. Get to know Theodore Nather, the first overseas LCMS missionary. Hear about how one church planter is sharing the gospel in an unreached corner of Albuquerque and discover anew what it truly means to be Lutheran and unashamed. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness. Interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you make a New Year's resolution to get in shape this year? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness at Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness can help you keep your New Year's resolution. Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. PerformanceFitness618.com.
What's the difference between brokenness and repentance? I've written a column in the latest Issues Etc. journal titled Personal Brokenness. We'll send it to you for free. Just click the red journal subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. In the Wittenberg Trail feature, Dr. Alfonso Espinosa writes about being raised a nominal Roman Catholic and finding the saving gospel in the Lutheran Confession. The free online Issues Etc. journal, issuesetc.org.